Yeah, I want to fight. Can you hear me? All right, Eric the Tech. Are we good with audio? Am I getting any audio? Are we good? Well, now, how about now? And more. How's that? Any better? No. Yeah, Eric the Tech. You can open this up. I can't hear myself. I can't hear anything, anyway. Welcome to Hagman. It is Tuesday, December 10th, 2024. I'm Doug Hagman, I think. I'm not sure. A lot of stuff happens when you go live and when you're not where you're supposed to be at the time you're supposed to be there. I just got spanked by Eric the Tech, and I deserve it. I deserve that. So, all right. With me tonight, riding shotgun, co-hosting the show tonight, is none other than John Alexander Moore. I have no idea if that's his middle name. I don't know, but John Moore is with me, of course, and he's going to be riding shotgun. We're going to have a great show lined up. Everything from the how really this is a big thing. How the left, the socialists, how they're working in concert with one another across the globe. But then we're going to get some information, some good stuff, some good updates from around the border. Ben Berkwam, I don't know whether you saw his latest report. I'm telling you, it's fantastic. But then some bad stuff. You know, we can't forget about, look, we cannot forget about Maui. We cannot forget about the fires in Hawaii, what happened there. We can't forget about the spy balloons. We can't forget about North Carolina. So we're going to be talking about North Carolina. People should be in prison because of North Carolina. And we're going to be talking about the military, what's going on with our military. Are we running out of missiles? And then, of course, the entire Biden crime family. And I want to get John's take on the timeline of events. The victim of the CEO, Brian Thompson, Luigi Mangione, and I'm going to throw in for good measure, Nancy Pelosi, you know, the magic stock trader. Anyway. So that's what I want to get into. But before I bring John on, and again, I want to thank everyone for joining me. Thank you for being in the chat. I appreciate that. And if you weren't in the chat, I couldn't thank you, but I'm thanking you now. Before I bring John on, let me just pull this up here. Folks, I've got a great little device for you. It's available at staywarmnow.com. I did not bring it again because it's still cold out. I mean, it's a little bit nipply out there for Christmas vacation fans, okay? So you can also brace yourself for your winter bills. I'm going to tell you right now, a lot of experts are saying that we can expect double-digit increases on our heating bills. So we need all the help we can get. Thanks to Stay Warm Now, I can heat a small area or actually a relatively large area when you really think about it, with this little device. All I do is I plug it into a wall outlet. I set it from either gentle warmth, you know, if I'm just have a chill. You know, us old people have chills, right? Or, you know, blast furnace. What do they call those things? A blast furnace setting, basically. Now, those, of course, I'm just making that up, but that's the way it feels. It feels good. And this device works really well. It heats any home or any room, makes it warm, nice and cozy in no time. It's compact, but very strong. Again, I can warm up the bedroom or office. I got one going in my office right now. And, you know, this also includes overheating protection. I'm telling you, that was one of the fears I had with the bigger space heaters. But this includes that. It has adjustable heat levels, as I was saying, and also different levels, like I said, you know, from actually from gentle warmth to toasty comfort. But so do yourself a favor right now, especially with Christmas coming up. Hey, maybe you've got, I don't know, grandma, grandpa, Maybe this is for you. Maybe you've got somebody sitting in a place that's a little drafty. Order one right now. Grab one right now. 60% off this holiday season only at staywarmnow.com. Plus, if you order today, you'll receive a free expedited shipping. I mean, no, believe me, you can get this like really quick. I got mine in, I don't know. It seemed like I just pressed the order button and it was here like right away. It's got a 60-day satisfaction guarantee and several other bonuses free as well. So once again, go to staywarmnow.com. Give the gift of warmth this holiday season. All right. So, John, how are you, sir, as I'm trying to gather my thoughts, my papers, and my hearing at this point? How are you?
Legal.
You know, you say that. Do you mean that? I want to know, do you mean that?
I do mean it.
All right.
Life is grand. I have a beautiful wife. I have a beautiful life. I love my work and I love my country. And yes, everything is great.
Pan the camera over. I want to see if you're being held hostage by your wife. Okay. you know, I just have to see. But no, well, it's good. So thanks for joining me tonight. I did last night, I did solo, and I tried to lay out what was going on in Syria and going all the way back to the Jimmy Carter days and then kind of combined the Arab Spring into this. And so tonight, kind of the focus on the international level is going to be on Ukraine, Burisma, and the Biden criminal enterprise. I don't know whether you saw Mike Benz. I'm not even sure which platform I saw him on, but he was just laying down some truth bombs here. And then, of course, I'm going to get your thoughts on the shooting, the homicide of that
CEO.
So where do you want to start?
Well, let's just start with Syria. It's a convoluted mess, first of all. We have, I think, at the foundation of everything regarding Syria, big oil interests, the pipeline that would be and probably will be going across Syria now. Russia has a strong interest in keeping their warm water port. They'll probably cut a deal with whoever ends up controlling that part of Syria. The United States and Israel have been supporting ISIS, of all things, which I think is a massive mistake, but that's what we've been doing. I was just watching a video of the rebels going into a Syrian hospital and murdering wounded veterans, Syrian military veterans, laying in their hospital bed. I watched them murdering soldiers who unarmed soldiers who surrendered, just shooting them in cold blood. I watched a cousin of President Assad being hung for whatever reason. I guess they didn't like the guy. Using a crane, that's their favorite, one of their favorite forms of execution, is use a construction crane to lift the prisoner up high while he slowly dies to death while being hung. We're back to the same barbarity and barbaric practices of ISIS that we saw a few years ago. I wouldn't be surprised if they start burning people to death as they were doing back then, or cutting their throats with their knives. And it's just absolutely horrible. There's about four groups, Doug, that want to that are fighting each other in Syria. I think the Syrian army is toast and is probably done, but there's four others that are fighting each other for control of Syria. We may end up with the country being divided in four different pieces. I don't know. But as always, the people that pay the price are the innocent men, women, and children who want nothing to do with war, nothing to do with these four factions. They just want to live their lives and be left alone, as most people do around the planet, unfortunately. In the meantime, I understand the U.S. military is using B-52s to bomb things they don't want the rebels to get their hands on. Carpet bombing is what that's called. And it's a massive nightmare that will be going on for at least another year, Doug, while these various factions fight it out with these very powerful forces supporting them, Russia supporting one group, U.S. and Israel supporting another, Iran supporting another, and I don't know about the fourth group, but it's an absolute mess, Doug.
And it's a mess. It's a mess of our own making. And the U.S., the CIA, Pentagon, as well as Mossad, and now Turkey is involved as well.
Yeah, that's right. Turkey's supporting that fourth group. That's who the missing piece was. You're right.
Okay. My apologies, Eric. I sent you, actually, I went to send you a thread on Syria. I thought I had it in the show notes. Apparently, I don't. I will send it to you now. You've got to see this. This is exactly what you were talking about. Eric the Tech, it's coming at you now. So the chaos right now is in the streets. Unbelievable. The amount of murders that are going to be taking place because of this, unbelievable. And I look at people like John Bolton, Victoria Nuland, Samantha Power, Barack Hussein Obama, especially the usual suspects being involved in the planning and operation of this. I really do. I see this taking place, and I have to blame them. Now you've got two. To me, it's interesting. You have a faction within this, well, the CIA, and then a faction within the Pentagon. They seem, when you really dig down into this, and I don't know if you can comment on this, but they seem to be at odds with one another.
Well, I've observed this firsthand, Doug.
Okay, go ahead.
The fall of 1967, I visited CIA headquarters where I was stationed every day, Monday through Friday, to pick up their documents. I also read the Army intelligence documents, and there was conflicting reports leading up to the Tet Offensive. The CIA warning everybody that there's going to be a major offensive. The U.S. Army under General Westmoreland saying, no, in fact, Westmoreland gave a speech before a joint session of Congress, his famous light at the end of the tunnel speech, reclaimed the Viet Cong were no longer could mount a credible offensive on the battlefield. And that's been more than half a century ago when we had these two disparate conflicting reports. And, of course, the CIA report was correct, and the Army report was wrong. And a lot of GIs, I don't know how many hundreds, died as a consequence, because why would you get ready for something that's not going to happen? And the Army did not get ready for what the CIA said was going to happen and what I knew was going to happen also, Doug.
Exactly. So tell me then, what, in your estimation, look, you've got the military contacts and experience, so what... talk to me about the timing of all this, and talk to me about the intent in your view of what this is all about. I mean, Assad was not the great, obviously he was a bad guy. We know that, but
by what measure?
Well, okay. I mean, there have been reports, and I think they're pretty credible reports, that he did use chemical weapons on his own people back, what, 4 years ago, 5 years? I'm not sure of the timeline. Did he not?
Well, there's actually some dispute about how authentic those reports are.
Okay. All right.
And under Assad, we had, I think, 1.25 million Christians in Syria. We're now down to about 250,000, and the rebels have said they're basically going to murder the Christians that are in Syria, making them all refugees immediately to try to escape before they're murdered. We can go back to 24 years ago with Saddam Hussein, who the only weapons of mass destruction he had were provided by the United States. There were chemical weapons provided by the United States when he was our buddy fighting against Iran.
Right.
Iran under Saddam was the best place in the Middle East, far better than our ally Israel, far better than our ally Saudi Arabia to be a Christian. I can't imagine now or in the future a Christian being the third in command of the country of Israel, as was the case in Iraq. And I talked to an Iraqi soldier. He got to the United States. He was a sergeant working for the NCO club that they had there in Iraq, similar to the NCO clubs we have in our U.S. military. And here's what he told me. He says, John, President Saddam Hussein would never put a Muslim in charge of anything to do with money. He always put a Christian in charge of anything to do with money. I found it rather revealing, don't you, Doug?
Say that again.
Saddam Hussein, when it came to putting people in charge of anything to do with money in his government, he always put a Christian in charge of anything to do with money, never put a Muslim in charge of anything to do with money.
Okay. Wow. It speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Well, it does.
I mean, okay. All right. Well,
getting back to Syria, the pipeline.
Go ahead.
The pipeline is the key to understanding what the hell is going on there. Once the pipeline is built, there's going to be revenue from that pipeline going through Syria as well as going through Turkey. And the big fight is over who's going to get the revenue from that pipeline. And that remains to be seen with these four different groups. Whoever has the best military and the best funding is going to win. I don't know who that's going to be yet, but the side being supported by the United States and Israel, these barbaric ISIS ragheads who murder innocent people all the time, is very likely going to be the victor. We'll see.
So when you're talking about the Arab gas pipeline, you're looking at really, and again, correct me if this is not correct, you're looking at this really, again, Arab gas pipeline, but it goes, I mean, from Iran to Iraq to Syria type thing. Are we talking about what was once called, and folks, you can look this up, I think you might be able to look this up. Mom, let me see. Yeah, you can look this up online. The Friendship Pipeline by the government.
I believe the same pipeline. Yes,
okay.
Sir.
And that pipeline runs along the western coast of Syria, because right to the right or to the east of that pipeline, you have mountains the size of the Appalachian Mountains here in the U.S. So you've got some problems. And that mountain range that runs north to south, more toward the western part of Syria, offers a lot of protection for certain assets, but it appears that really pretty much everything is in jeopardy. And we can't forget about Turkey as well, because now Turkey has some involvement in this.
They do.
Eric the Tech, I don't know if you got it. I believe I sent you a link to an X thread about some pictures on the ground and what's going on there in Syria. It's a pretty lengthy thread. And to watch it, I mean, there it is there. Thank you, by the way, Eric, for having patience with me and putting that up. But there, as you scroll down here, let me just get on the same page here. Okay. As you scroll down on that thread, you can see that, and I'm not going to play the videos, but you can see the executions, you can see the torture, you can see, I mean, this is anything but freedom, you know, setting the people in that region free. This is one of the worst, I mean, I cannot believe, I guess help me out, I cannot believe that we would sponsor the very people that behead, you know, Christians, that behead any non-Muslim, that drag people to their deaths in their cars. We are supporting this. We're funding this. What the hell? You know, is this all over money, or is this another proxy war with Russia? at the hands of the Biden regime, not Biden because he's a crispy critter, but, you know, it's difficult for me to look at the inhumanity and figure that this is nothing but a big power play. But that's, you know, that's me. But I guess that's it,
well,
right?
What these forces we're supporting are doing would embarrass Genghis Khan, quite frankly. It's absolute barbaric behavior of executing innocent unarmed men, and I'm sure men, women, and children in some cases. And to be supporting them flies in the face of everything we know and believe to be right about the way war should be conducted, the way humans should treat each other, the way the United States should be treating other countries in the world. It just absolutely flies in the face of all that, Doug.
Boy, that's true. Let me see if I have... I think I did pull up a couple of... Well, again, whether or not it would be good to show or necessary to show, I don't really know. But let's see here. Yeah, we don't have to go anywhere in particular with that. Folks, that is right now what it is. And if you have any questions, I mean, as far as I was able to connect the dots last night, I think was a good primer on that. You be the judge. But, I mean, you got to go way back to the Carter Doctrine and way back to the hostages in Iran and right through even the first days of the Biden regime releasing funds to Iran. Yes, Iran has a role in all of this, has an interest in this. And it kind of paints the picture, connects the dots as to where we are today. But that was yesterday. But one of the biggest things, John, I'm going to play this, if you don't mind. It's a minute 32. It's a minute and a half. The globalists, now the word liberals is used in place of globalists, I think, but the globalists are working together all around the world. And I saw this and I thought, wow, this would explain Syria. It would explain Ukraine. It would explain the lack of help in the U.S. and other things. And things we haven't even talked about yet. And this is from the former Prime Minister of UK, Liz Truss, explaining that the left all around the world are helping each other, plus using the NGOs like the WEF and other organizations to really prop things up. Here is cut one. Folks, you can find all of these at HagmanPI.com. Under today's episode, click the title of the show. It'll take you to a new page. All the episodes or all the links will be right there. It's actually fun to do. And don't forget to follow us on Rumble. And go to Rumble, create an account, follow us, and give us a thumbs up if you like it. But here's cut one.
Madam Prime Minister, I want to ask, it seems in watching this documentary this morning, the tactics you faced are what Donald Trump faces, what conservatives are faced in Canada, what other conservatives around the world are. It seems like there's a master playbook that liberals have that they're deploying across the entire Western world. Am I overreading that?
I think that is absolutely right. I think the ideology started in universities, whether it's wokery, whether it's climate change extremism, whether it's Marxist economics, but these ideas started in universities. I think organizations like the OECD with its minimum tax agreement, the IMF have perpetuated these ideas. And what has happened is the left has worked together. I mean, one of the issues I faced is it wasn't just a pile-on from the establishment in Britain. I also faced a pile-on from the American establishment, including Joe Biden. Even though tax rates in Britain are much higher than tax rates in America. But what we've seen in both of our countries is power that used to sit in the hands of democratically elected politicians have been outsourced to so-called independent agencies. And technocrats have been taking the decisions that politicians should be taking. And they don't agree with the vast majority of people. They believe in big immigration, high taxes, big government. And we're getting an increasing divide between the elite who make the decisions and the populace who just don't like them at all.
Madam
Sorry about that. So, John, that's kind of pretty much
president
summarizes it, right? I mean, we're looking at this network that is really pulling the strings. And what I'm seeing, and I want to get your take on this especially, I am seeing this network become unraveled with President Trump in the wings right now. Okay, I'm starting to see a little bit of unraveling because of this and the desperation of the left. And I think the timeline on Syria, this was going to happen, but I think this was made to happen in the waning days of the Biden regime and pre-President Trump coming into office. That's kind of my view on that. But
what's happened can't be undone. It can't.
No.
President Assad is gone. The Syrian government is finished. And these four factions will fight it out to the bitter end, literally, with one taking home all the marbles, so to speak. But let's go back to what the former prime minister was talking about. Sure. The complicity of these Western universities in these false teachings about climate change, false teachings about transgenderism. And let's not leave out this government funding of NGOs, which are complicit in bringing in tens of millions of illegal aliens in this country. The Red Cross is one. Several church groups, including the Catholic Church and others, they need to be defunded and take away all their public funding as a way to either slow them down or stop them. And of course, activity they're engaged in is criminal activity. When you assist somebody in committing a crime, crossing our border illegally is a crime. They themselves are committing a crime. And I'd love to see a reformed Department of Justice and FBI go after this criminal activity on the part of these NGOs. Wouldn't you, Doug?
It has to be done. USAID, for example, you know, although it's got aid in the name, there's no aid given by the USAID. If people say, oh, yeah, there is, it's really not aid. It is, it's really, in my view, based on everything I've seen with that organization alone, it's more of a money transfer operation. And then these other NGOs, money laundering and transfer operations as well. And this is something that, moving away from Syria momentarily anyway, this is something that was noted by Ben Berquam and Oscar Ramirez in Mexico. They mentioned several of the agencies that you mentioned or that you referenced. And the reason I said, too, about the unraveling is what they're seeing in Mexico take place right now is a crackdown on the illegal shipments of fentanyl. Very interesting, because you've got a route for fentanyl, you've got a route for humans, and I mean the border situation is pretty complex, and then you've got right. The cartel activity and cartels engaged in fruit transfer across the border. I'm telling you, the cartels are really leading the pack. But with your permission, now this is a little bit of an extended clip, but it speaks to what you just mentioned. We'll just take it now to south of the border and hear from Ben Berquam and add to the mix this unraveling and this crackdown. And people know that Biden's no longer and President Trump is coming in. Is it all right if we play cut two?
Let's see it.
All right. Folks, this is Cut 2 at HagmanPI.com. Here you go.
into Monterrey, Mexico. It's about an 11-hour drive from Mexico City. Been on the road all the way up through the center of Mexico. And one of the interesting parts of this drive, more confirmation of the Trump effect, is the amount of National Guard troops and checkpoints that we've seen. We've gone through at least five of them, and it appears to be strategically directed at the cartels, and in particular at the fentanyl, as President Trump called for. Oscar, I know you were talking about that earlier.
Yes, the biggest seizure that it was done, it was a couple of weeks ago, less than a couple of weeks ago, 1.2 tons of fentanyl that were detained in Culiacan. And adding to the point that Ben was, saying right now, excuse me for that, adding to the point that Ben was saying is there were multiple inspection points as we were driving over here, and this is the drop effect. This multiple inspection points is due to the cartel that they're extortioning, kidnapping, and also the multiple activity of trafficking to the north.
Yeah, and sorry about that. It's getting windy out here, too. So our camera almost took a dive. But, yeah, it's been an eventful trip, and we're only getting to the beginning of it, so...
Yeah, the winds of change are blowing. There's no doubt about it. That's for sure. Gentlemen, in the segment just before, Sheriff Richard Mack from the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association called for the defunding of the NGOs that really make all of the human trafficking possible into the United States. I know you have focused so much on what they do, Catholic Charities, Lutheran Services, people like that. Is that something you think doable? And for the people you talk to, is it on the radar for the Trump administration?
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, that is number one to me, is defunding not just Catholic Charities, Lutheran Social Services, Jewish Family Services, Bethany Christian, but the United Nations, UNHCR, OIM. That is really the tip of the spear, and run through the World Economic Forum. All of this is coming through this communist ideology of the World Economic Forum. You'll own nothing and be happy. This great reset, global reset. And as Oscar talks about so much, the global compact of migration, not only do these organizations need to be defunded, they need to be investigated, and any of them that were directly involved in trafficking and directly involved with the cartels or involved with undermining America from within, I believe need to be prosecuted. Now, I'm not an attorney, I'm not a prosecutor, but I think it needs to go beyond just defunding.
Well, and more than that, I believe that also, you know, just defunding the United Nations, the Americans, so wake up. You're the number one funder to OIM, to the UNHCR. You're the one that is releasing more American taxpaying money. And this is the most, you know, strategic, massive trafficking of children and women and men into the United States of America. They need to investigate. They need to audit all these progressive activists that they're working in cahoots, a lot of them, with the cartel that they have been attacking not only the government of the United States of America, but also the government of Mexico. They work on the both sides of the border. And also, all of these fake lawyers, these fake humanitarians, they need to be investigated. And if that is the case, that they're found guilty, that they were in cahoots with the cartel, find them guilty and prosecute it under federal law.
Oscar, before we let you guys go, the wheels of government move slowly in every country.
So there we go. Mentioning the various organizations you mentioned, but in the context of the southern border, look, we've got to really, I think the moment President Trump steps into the Oval Office, we've got to like hit the ground running.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Hit the ground running is a term that comes from the Army Airborne, by the way. And, yeah, we need to be have the attitudes of paratroopers in this conflict. What was mentioned a moment ago, the tip of the spear being United Nations. United Nations is the head of the snake, and the head of the snake needs to be cut off. If it wasn't for U.S. funding, there'd be no United Nations. The real estate that that building occupies was donated by the Rockefellers back in the early 1960s, I believe, around 1959 or so. And they need to be gone. Let somebody else fund them. Let them go have a headquarters in Brussels or Europe someplace. We don't need them. In fact, the very first UN meeting, which was in San Francisco around 1947, it was out of the 50 U.S. People there, Americans, only three of them were communists. The United Nations has been a communist organization from day one and continues to be. They do not have the best interest of the United States in mind. They have the interest of the international communist conspiracy in mind, and we need to defund them and get them out of our country, Doug, as far as I'm concerned.
Amen to that. Do you think it's possible? Could we see that happen this time around? I mean, the attitude needs to. Yeah, man, the attitude with President Trump coming into this term is really a kick-ass, take no prisoners kind of approach. At least that's what I'm seeing.
Me too.
And folks in the chat, you can tell me or write in there if you think that, you know, are we going to see action or just see continuous talk? I'm just interested to see what the people in the chat think. But John, yes. So that's one thing we definitely need to do. Now, I want to ask you, too, before we go too much further, what have you been focused on with your show and different guests and stuff? Obviously, folks, John Moore, thelibertyman.com, go there, bookmark his website. He's got a radio show every morning. Definitely listen to it. But make it part of your day because it is informative. It's at times I find it inspiring. It's really no nonsense.
Well, it may help to let people know who listens to my show. First of all, we have men and women in the Pentagon listening to my show. We know that it's been verified through several independent sources. We have at least two listeners in North Korea. We know that. We don't know who they are.
North Korea. Okay.
Yes,
that check that off the, I didn't have that on my card of potentials.
One or more people with Judicial Watch. In fact, they offered me a job the summer of 2001. I'd been on the radio about 5 or 6 years at that point. So it's a wide variety of people in high places as well as low places that listen to my show because the content is unique and very difficult to find otherwise. Our mutual friend, Sam Anders, of course, is with me every Monday. Sam has been approached by a judge in Butler, Pennsylvania, to be an expert witness and give testimony on the attempted assassination of President Trump.
His expert testimony on the attempted ballistics, right?
Yes. Well, not just ballistics, but everything that had to do with the use of a rifle in that situation, or the lack thereof on the part of some officials. My friend Dave Hodges has very unique and special sources that he comes on the air with on the Tuesday Morning Roundtable, along with my friend Steve O'Neill, who's a nuclear scientist, and Steve Bannoun, who has very close personal contacts with the Israeli intelligence as well as American intelligence, a former CIA field operative. I think you've had Bill Federer on your show, haven't you, Doug?
Oh, yes. Yeah, Bill's a great guy.
Yeah, well, Bill and I first met when he ran for Congress in 1998. He's a personal friend. I helped him out with some situations legally, and he's on with me every Wednesday. And, of course, my friend Doug, that would be Dr. Horowitz, who's authored about 25 or 26 books. He's lost count. But the latest one will be published in the not-too-distant future. Another friend of mine, Jeff Nyquist, I've been interviewing for about 22 years, the author of 6 books concerning the international communist conspiracy. And I could go on there on with that. Well, let's for mention my friend Professor McKinney, who's on a sabbatical right now. Professor McKinney taught astrophysics at Cornell University. He taught mathematics at Cornell University. He is an amateur archaeologist that is consulted with foreign governments on matters of archaeology. And he solved a 2,000-year-old mathematical problem using a simple paper pencil method to find any prime number, which was a 2,000-year-old mathematical problem. So it's quite a list of guests. All have their specialties. And I should mention Professor McKinney's authored about a dozen books himself.
I like your guest lineup, and on Tuesdays, the roundtable, especially interesting, at least as far as I'm concerned. But they're all good. All the programs are good. So make sure, folks, you bookmark thelibertyman.com. The link will be in the show description box under the title at hagmanpi.com. But listen, bookmark, and you can go back into the archives as well. So, yeah, it's but what are you? What's your topics of discussion, current events wise? Your focus is it international or is it domestic?
It's both. It's both, and all right. We segue back and forth between these Trump picks that he's picking for his administration. What's going on with all the legal matters concerning President Trump being wrapped up and disposed of? In fact, just this morning, we were talking about how if President Trump had been elected in 2020, he would have had to deal with all these legal matters while being president, which would have been incredibly complex and time-consuming and distracting. Well, that four-year break he had where he wasn't president gave him the time to focus on the legal matters, get them all disposed of, get them out of the way for the most part, so that now when he comes into office in about 5 weeks, he can focus on being president rather than being distracted with all these legal matters, which are now almost all completely disposed of, Doug. And in hindsight, I think that was a great thing, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Now, Tish James, of all people, is coming out and saying, well, you know what? We're moving forward on some civil issues. And of course, that's... to me, that smacks of desperation because she's in trouble herself legally. But I digress. But yes, I think you know that shows that God is in control of these things. I think having put a lot of this behind him, he can in fact focus on what's important. And no, I think you're absolutely correct on this. So yeah.
Well, man. When it comes to foreign matters, President Trump met with Zelensky in Paris.
Yes.
There were discussions, obviously, between the two of them. President Trump is now advocating a ceasefire in Ukraine. President Putin has agreed to meet with President Trump. They know each other. They can talk. And that absolutely disastrous war needs to come to an end. Russia was pushed into this war by design. They were given no choice but to invade Ukraine, in their opinion. There was 40 biological weapons laboratories on the border with Russia, specifically building biological weapons to attack Russian ethnic people. Yep. And the peace agreement reached in Europe between Ukraine and Russia was just a fraud designed to give Ukraine more time to go to battle with Russia. The war needs to end. Russia needs to, and Ukraine need to sign some kind of peace accord. Every war ends in peace in some way or another. It's time for this one to end. The people, once again, just like in Syria, the people paying the price are the innocent men, women, and children who want nothing to do with either side, but they're caught up in this war that they have no desire to be part of, and they're paying the price. And of course, the young Russian men, both Russians and Ukrainians are paying the price also in this no-win war that Russia, if they chose to, could smash Ukraine probably in a week if they chose to with their overwhelming might, but they've chosen not to for their own reasons. They may be motivated to have the West use up their supplies of missiles and artillery shells, which pretty much they've done, weakening them to the point where if Russia did decide to move west, the NATO countries wouldn't be able to withstand that move. That's certainly a possibility. We don't know what Russia wants to do.
In my view, based on my research, I cannot separate Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, the entire Biden family with what the events taking place in Ukraine.
They're all intertwined.
Exactly, as well as Obama and, you know, again, the usual neocon suspects. But going back to Maidan in I think, 2014, and even before that, the Orange Revolution in Ukraine. But again, I digress. But, well, actually, you know, this might be a good time. Mike Benz had just a fantastic, you know, Mike Benz, right, John?
I know of him,
I mean, it's like I know him. I don't know him personally, but he had a great segment about Ukraine. And with your permission.
Let's do that. Let's
play. Okay. All right. This, folks, this is Cut 8. And this is a little bit longer. It's over 4 minutes, but. It's every word is worth it. And this is the explanation with regard to Ukraine, Burisma, and the Biden crime family. Here it is.
Well, if you could simply harvest the endogenous gas supplies in Ukraine, Ukraine happens to sit on Europe's third largest unexploited natural gas resources, or the shale that can be converted. And so they... So Burisma was a tool to be able to supplement the Western LNG with an endogenous, an at-home Ukrainian alternative gas supply so that the sanctions could go through in Europe and so that Ukraine would not be reliant on Russia to have cheap natural gas. But this required... Naftogaz, the state-owned Ukrainian gas company, which George Soros has been locked in a power struggle with Putin over privatization for decades, and Burisma was the largest of the private for-profit firms that had the gas rights for exploitation of eastern Ukraine and the surrounding Crimea offshore gas supplies, and so Burisma was seen as an instrument of statecraft by the U.S. State Department to economically bankrupt Russia and to militarily shut down Russia's war machine as part of the larger play for Naftogaz and to build up Ukraine's innate gas supplies, which were underexploited, in part because of a military tension over who actually controls that territory. That's why the Donbass is so important. That's why after the counter-coup, the U.S. was sponsoring the military assistance impeachment of Trump was about in 2019. We weren't at war with Russia then, right? This is 2019. This is 3 years before the outbreak. We were sponsoring the military reconquest of that region because that's where the energy resources are. The population's mostly in the West. The resources are mostly in the East. It's the same thing with China and Xinjiang in terms of that dichotomy. And so this is, you know, when Hunter Biden said, when he was asked what he was doing on Burisma and whether he felt shame about it, he said he was doing a patriotic duty for his country. Burisma was an instrument of statecraft for the State Department. What they were doing is they were building that up. That's why they had funding from U.S. aid. Again, the CIA funding conduit was working. The Atlantic Council with 7 CIA directors on its board. Hunter Biden's on the chairman's advisory board of the NDI. Hunter Biden's law firm even has – this just broke 4 months ago. Hunter Biden's law firm actually had a wrote a pitch to the U.S. State Department for how Burisma could serve as a – you know, as basically a vassal for U.S. State Department interests in the region. You had Burisma's back channeling with the U.S. ambassador in Rome on similar grounds in terms of the Italy Greece supplies. But what you have here is a private sector for profit company. Many such cases, by the way, because not only was Hunter Biden on the board of Burisma as chairman's advisory board of the CIA's DNC cutout, but who else was on the board of directors right next to Hunter Biden? Kofor Black. Kofor Black, who spent 30 years in the CIA, won CIA Distinguished Medals Awards. You can read the Daily Beast article where Kofor Black is described as Mitt Romney's Sherpa to the intelligence community to get the CIA's blessing to back him against Barack Obama. What is this CIA luminary doing on the board of Burisma? What is Hunter Biden, who the CIA personally calls the Justice Department off investigating his funding sources and is on the chairman's advisory board of the CIA cut out? It's because, just like we have done since the 1940s, it is a private, it is a dual use entity. It's a for-profit standalone private sector firm, but it's also an instrument of statecraft, because every dollar that Burisma generates is one less dollar that Gazprom generates. And so it's the best job in the world if you can get it. It is, it's you get to keep all the profits, and you are getting the backing of the battering ram of the blob. And remember, we personally intervened. It was Joe Biden at the Council on Foreign Relations who bragged about forcing, using the diplomatic carrots and sticks of the U.S. empire, that if Ukraine wanted their $1 billion in assistance, they had to fire the prosecutor who was investigating Burisma.
Boy, I'll tell you what, it's my first time out. So what are your thoughts on that, John? I mean, there's a crap ton of information in there, I'll tell you.
Big oil interests are behind this, obviously. What this gentleman told us ties it all together in a nice, neat package, making sense of why Hunter Biden was on the Burisma board of directors. Now it makes sense. Before, it just looked like corruption on the face of it. Now it looks like international intrigue with very serious geopolitical matters involved. Same thing applies with Gaza. There's oil deposits that exceed what's in Saudi Arabia under Gaza. They believe, what I read, they now have the technology to deal with the oil is under such pressure that they didn't have the technology to deal with it 20 years ago, but apparently now they do. Just vast supply of oil, bigger than Saudi Arabia, under the Gaza real estate. And, of course, as we mentioned earlier in the show, the oil pipeline going through Syria. Excellent book I mentioned and before. It was published 20-something years ago that documents the involvement of big oil in every war since 1900. The title of the book is The Prize. It was also a miniseries done by NPR. You peel back the layers of the onion in these major conflicts, you start finding big oil interest, Doug, and that seems to be almost without fail.
It's all about energy at this point.
Yes.
I mean, Ukraine, and I mentioned, I think it was yesterday, but you think about Ukraine, the Nord Stream pipeline. You know how we destroyed that. So all of these moves are calculated moves that I think that would be the benefit, and the side benefit is really bankrupting or attempting to bankrupt Russia at the same time, according to these globalists. Is that kind of your thought,
well,
too?
Well, that was their public statements on one hand, on the other. The sanctions have not hurt Russia at all that we can tell, but they have hurt the West tremendously.
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't know what think tank or folks group put these things together, but they absolutely screwed up, in my opinion, Doug.
Yeah, 100%. And a lot of people don't really understand the sanctions, about how they could backfire, but they have. And again, it's on the Biden State Department. It's on their head, the CIA, the military industrial, whatever you want to call it, but the deep state, you know. You're looking at the numbers just this year alone. Well, as of November 1st of this year, Russia has captured, this is in the side, I suppose, 442 square miles in Ukraine. That just since August 6th of this year. So you're looking at August, September, October, really just over 90 days. And that's about a quarter more than the first 7 months of the year. So, and it's interesting too, the loss of life is just incredible over there. You're looking at, this is what they admit. Zelensky, Ukraine has lost 400,000 soldiers, but the death count is much higher. And many more civilians, probably 2.5 times that number. So it's well over 1 million people. This is just absolutely incredible how things are playing out right now. Go ahead.
It is incredible. The loss of life is off the charts crazy. They've lost more men than we did in the entire World War II, I believe. I think one of our losses in World War II, about 250,000, I believe.
World War II?
American losses.
American lives? Yeah, I'm not 100% certain on that. And right. I certainly don't want to underestimate it at all.
So. Well, regardless, it's a tremendous loss of life in a country that doesn't have that bigger population to begin with. And, majorities of these soldiers, just like most wars, are the young recruits and draftees that are in their late teens, early 20s. It's just an absolute disaster, and will hurt this country for a generation to come.
100%. It almost seems like right now we are engaged in these forever wars, despite, you know, our Afghanistan withdrawal, how poorly that was conducted, and drawing down troops elsewhere. But we still have 900 troops in Syria right now, and we've got hostages being held in Syria that, frankly, I don't know. One hostage in particular has been there for a number of years. Tice, I believe, is his last name.
Right.
You know, what's their fate? You know, I'm just curious at this point. It doesn't seem like Biden gives the Biden regime.
We don't know what's going on behind the scenes in terms of having that hostage released. And I'm not sure we even know who has custody of that hostage, do we?
No, especially not today when you have multiple groups going at it. So, yeah, who has custody of Mr. Tice? I don't know, but certainly.
Well, hopefully whoever's holding him will treat him humanely and be motivated by money to release this individual. I don't know. We have a policy of not negotiating with terrorists, but I'm not sure if the people holding him would be designated as terrorists or not. There's a lot of unknowns here, aren't there?
Well, it's interesting because just this week, and as incredible as this is, the group that is really behind the takeover or behind the toppling of Assad is HTS. The State Department under Biden was just talking about declassifying that group as a terrorist group. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever, given their actions that we see play out today.
So, absolutely. It makes no sense.
Yeah, I don't get it. Okay. So there's all of that. One thing that I don't want, there's a lot of things I don't want people to forget about. The J6 prisoners. Now, we saw the update from Ben Berkwam and Oscar Ramirez saying, hey, there's this Trump effect taking place down there in Mexico. There's also, right now with the J6 prisoners, we had apparently a lot of people having seen the original clip we played. It's not because of us, but because of the viral nature of the internet from the original clip from yesterday about Judge Lamberth sentencing someone excessively. The good news is there appears to be this Trump effect now, and Lamberth is again in the spotlight, but a little bit different this time. This is cut five. This is about the January 6th continuing litigation, continuing arresting of people from January 6th. And this has got to stop. And we've got to take these judges, and we've got to take the prosecutors, and we've got to take the investigators and others really into, I really think that they need to be charged for a number of different crimes, but specifically the giving the finger to the Supreme Court and saying, look, we're not going to follow the 1512 statute or the Supreme Court ruling on that, and continuing to sentence people under the 1512 statute, except for today. This is cut five, just under 3 minutes. Here's the
take.
Okay,
let's watch it.
All right, cut five.
Yes, we do have some good news after what appears to be our public pressure on Judge Royce Lamberth, who you and I have been talking about for weeks. Natalie and I talked about him yesterday. It appears that he showed a little bit of mercy in court today for a J6er, who just a few weeks ago he was threatening to put in jail for months. And this is a J6er who had been convicted of that 1512C2, that conviction found unlawful by the Supreme Court, then vacated. But the DOJ still wants people to spend as much time in prison on misdemeanors as they had on that now unlawful felony. Anyway, Judge Lamberth sent out this big order a few weeks ago. It made it sound like he was going to throw the book at this defendant once again, but did not. He instead ordered him to time served. He had already been in prison for 11 months. And what I think is the first time what happened in court is Judge Lamberth ordered the government to reimburse this J6 defendant for fines and restitution he had paid on that now unlawful 1512C2. Now, I don't want to take, we're not going to take all the credit because there are good, very good defense lawyers involved here. But we are shining a light on these judges, what they are doing in court that no one else is doing. We are talking about what they're doing to these J6ers, still throwing them behind bars, still putting them on trial, still charging new defendants. And we are, you and I and a few other outlets who cover my work, are the only ones who are calling them out. So I think today, a combination of good lawyering, very good lawyering, and public pressure on Judge Lamberth indicated a little change of heart today, Steve.
Do we have a photo of Judge? We don't. We're going to get
you
one.
You do.
We're going to make these people famous. They should be famous for what they did.
Yes.
Judges, you're going to be held accountable, let's say this, for what you did. You're not, what are you, some kind of god? You people are gods? I don't think so. You're going to be held accountable. We're going to lead an effort using facts and public pressure to have you impeached, to take and be impeached and go before the Senate, have a trial in the Senate, and be removed from your lifetime appointments because you're not worthy of those appointments. So, Judge Royce Lamberth, I'm glad you're getting old-time religion today. You know, I don't know. Maybe you get old-time religion on some, maybe you go back and review some of the other stuff. Who knows? Like President Trump says, it's a process. Trust the process.
Indeed. So that's a little bit of good news. Again, the Trump effect, I think, playing into this, as well as perhaps a systemic change and an insistence by the people on the right to correct the wrongs that have been made. Before I get to John for his reaction on that, folks, you're listening to the Hagmann Report. It is Tuesday, December 10th, 2024. I just want to thank everyone in the chat. Thank you so much for our radio listeners, podcast listeners, and the people on Rumble as well. Thank you for your support and your belief and your trust in this program. Before I get back to John, I'm going to show you this. Don'twastepower.com. This little device, what a great Christmas gift this would make. I use this as well in my home, my office, and my studio. I talk about this all the time. It would be a great thing to have for your use. Go, folks, go to don'twastepower.com. You know, electricity bills have set a record 10-year high this past summer. We already saw that. They're not coming down anytime soon. That's why I lower my energy bills with that device. It's awesome. It's absolutely, I absolutely love the cost savings it gives to me. And thanks to it, I can cut down on my electricity costs and beat the power companies. But the best part is I get more money in my pocket every month. I'm able to save more money. And that is because of that device. Please visit don'twastepower.com. That's don'twastepower.com. Or just simply click the link in the description box below to get the nation's leading way to lower energy bills. Up to 66% off and free express shipping, plus several other bonuses with every order completely for free, folks. Don'twastepower.com. And I want to thank them for sponsoring part of this program as well. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Folks, make sure you bookmark that website. Go to it and listen to John every weekday morning. As you commute to work, or if you're getting ready for work, or if you're just sitting back on the patio or on the lanai with the Golden Girls there, instead of watching those, listen to John and his guests. John, what are your thoughts on what Julie Kelly was talking about the, hey, you know, maybe there is a change of heart here. And also, is this part of a Trump effect, do you think?
Well, okay. First of all, for the audience who doesn't know, I'm a graduate paralegal. I'm trained and authorized to do anything an attorney does except represent a client in court. And I've done everything attorneys do except represent a client in court. What these judge, now, and this is not the only one, flies in the face of jurisprudence going back to the Magna Carta. Now, I don't know about the other 49 states, but in Missouri, the very first page of the very first statute says anything not covered in Missouri statutes is covered under English common law. That's the basis of our legal system, is English common law. Now we have, I don't know how many hundreds of men and women who walked past Capitol Police, who were not trying to hinder their passage to the U.S. Congress, the Capitol, walked around, looked at the artwork, committed no crimes, damaged no property, and they're being treated worse than a common criminal charged with murder, and who I've represented quite a few men and women charged with murder. And under American jurisprudence, if you're charged with murder, you're brought before a judge, typically within 24, no more than 48 hours, the charges are read, and bond is set. And you either make bond or you don't, and you're released until the trial. Now, that's the way we treat criminals charged with armed robbery, burglary, rape, murder, as opposed to common misdemeanor trespass. Men and women kept in jail, not brought before a judge, not given the chance to make bail, for misdemeanor trespass with no property damage.
Right.
That's unacceptable. That's what's been going on now for not quite 4 years. And unless these men or women committed a violent act while inside the Congress, they should be exonerated. They should be given a pardon. They should be given compensation for their lives being destroyed by this federal government out of control, which includes these judges, by the way. The Department of Justice and these judges need to pay a price for what they've done these past 4 years, Doug.
Do you think we're going to see, and this is, look, all we've seen over the last really 4 years is just this, a lot of bluster, a lot of talk, but no real investigation into the unselect committee of January 6th. You had Bannon go to jail. You had Navarro go to jail. You have, well, I think it's over now 1,500 people that were at the Capitol go to jail. Some weren't there, but supported others. I think there are a couple in that category. Are we going to see any kind of action on this, John, do you think? Whether Kash Patel gets in the FBI or whoever is Pam Bondi in the Department of Justice? I mean, are we going to see some real action after January 20th? That's my question.
I wish I had a crystal ball and could tell you what the future holds. But we hope and pray that Kash Patel would be instrumental in cleaning up this mess. He was a direct victim of the FBI surveillance and the Department of Justice, by the way. So he has a personal interest in this. He was personally surveilled by the FBI. And
that, didn't that just come? I mean,
it was just revealed
the
last 24 hours or so. It was revealed, yes.
Right, right. Unbelievable. And Bill Barr, for all the people who had faith in him, you know, to allow this to go on, really everyone at the Department of Justice, and then a name, folks, I'm going to toss this name out there, Mary McCord. Folks, understand, she is really, really dirty, as far as I'm concerned, in the DOJ, that she really needs to be closely investigated and perhaps even prosecuted for her role in pretty much everything. And let's not forget, John, the people tossed in jail for the FACE Act, or under the FACE Act, at these killing mills, these abortion centers, Planned Parenthood. I mean, how many are behind bars for simply praying at these places?
Well, once again, sometimes the people doing the prayers did trespass and did block the entrance to this place. Now, that's criminal trespass, which, once again, typically nobody was hurt, no property damage. It's going to remain a misdemeanor and right. Should be treated as such. They're changing the law to give these enhanced punishments for something that for the 200 years we've been a republic have been nothing more than common misdemeanors. It's unacceptable, in my opinion. They're turning jurisprudence on its head for political reasons, Doug.
I agree with you 100%. But what I want to see, though, are people, for example, the FACE Act, that is nothing more than, in my view, judicial activism, where hey, you've got to treat this type of criminal trespass differently than a regular criminal trespass, let's say at a store or some other location. But we've got to bring the laws back and back down to where they should be. Get rid of some of these other activist kind of measures and maneuvers. And we need to hold to account the people involved in the prosecution. To me, even right down to the local law enforcement officer, if you are not following the Constitution, but yet, you know, some law that was made, then to me, you cannot hide behind, I'm just doing my job defense, because you took an oath to the Constitution, not to some arbitrary law. So I think that we have to hold all of them accountable. And John, I believe civilly is the way to go. And once there is, for example, the J6ers, once they're pardoned, then I think because the process does become the punishment, as they have found out, let's turn the tables. Your thoughts on that?
Well, we need to turn the tables. These men and women, when they become a judge, they take an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, just like any elected official or appointed, as far as that goes. And they violated their oath of office. They violated everything that's taught in every law school. By doing what they've been doing now for these past 4 years. And that includes the prosecutors, of course, as well, not just the judges. Let's not leave out the prosecutors. And the way our system is set up, the defense attorneys have been helpless, and for the most part, in being able to correct these injustices with the normal course of events. I know. You know, we have 3,300 counties in the United States. And all 3,300, with maybe a couple of exceptions, normal jurisprudence rules the day, where if you're charged with a crime, you're brought before a judge, charges are read, the judge decides whether there was a reason to hold this person, their bail is set, and the system moves forward. This turns everything upside down, Doug, and it needs to be brought to a halt. People have lost all faith in jurisprudence, and for a very good reason. They can't be trusted, Doug, and it needs to be changed.
100%. And the other thing, too, about this, I've got another. This is a two-minute clip from Steve Bannon. This is the plan, okay, moving forward. And I believe... I believe this is going to take place because I've been hearing a lot of good things. You know, I've got low-level contacts, okay, but contacts nonetheless around the Mar-a-Lago area. And the things I'm hearing from the people being appointed or the people who know the people being appointed and what they're planning is, look, this is, you know, full throttle forward here. But this is a two-minute clip. This is cut six. You know, we're not going to turn the page. We're not going to concede anything. This Steve Bannon mentions the 2020 election. You know, are you and President Trump during the interview? I think it was a 60 Minutes interview. Are you going to finally concede that you know you lost that 2020 election? And he said no. But what's more important is everything after that. So this is cut six, and then, John, your comments on the other side. Okay. Here it is.
Comes at a time when the country is deeply divided, and now you're going to be leading this country for the next 4 years. For the sake of unifying this country, will you concede the 2020 election and turn the page on that chapter?
No. No, why would I do that? But let me just tell you when you say the country is deeply divided,
okay, let me have it.
I'm not the president.
I can play that. I can play that a million times because it's deeply divided. We'd turn the page on that. No, we're never going to turn the page on that. Here's what you're going to turn the page. You're going to fire everybody in this illegitimate regime. On the moment one, everybody, every battlefield commission, every historical society, the Smithsonian, the Kennedy Center, every person that was put in by this illegitimate regime is going to be shown the door. Shown the door. And we dare you, if you're listening, we dare you, because we know you are, we dare you to give a blanket preemptive pardon on these criminals. Yep, on Fauci. Yep, on Shifty Schiff. Yep, on Millie. Yep, on Liz. Liz had a big long thing yesterday. She came back with President Trump. You know, President Trump said something about that, about J6. No, we're going to pardon all the J6 people been in the prisons, and then they can get the civil suits and come after you people personally, which they have to do. And then we're going to go through all the J6 records on the committee. And by the way, it's got to be done. It's got to be adjudicated totally publicly. This has to be like Caesar's wife. It has to be completely 1,000% public. Or it should, it, like, kind of like the J6 committee should have been run the first time with a ranking member and in a minority council. You get all the information. You particularly get the cross examinations. But there also be, I'm sure, I don't know, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm sure there'll be a couple of three, you know, investigations and see where that gets. Maybe a special counsel. Maybe. I think that'd be pretty cool. But hey, that's all decisions guys have got to make. I'm just sitting here in front of a microphone screaming like a madman.
As we all are. You can cut that. The bottom line here is there's a call to action. You know, what about the 117 files that were deleted by J6, by the J6 committee, at the insistence of Liz Cheney? This is not right. So, John, I mean, do you sense a different approach this time as opposed to 2016.
Here's something people might remember. There's nothing more dangerous than a man who knows he's right and has no fear. That's President Trump. He knows he's right and he has no fear. And he's going to go after these people for what they did, stealing the election, turning our republic upside down, illegally jailing all these people, going after him personally, going after people in his administration, raiding his home, FBI just going through his wife's underwear drawer. It's all completely unacceptable. And it sounds like something would happen in what's been called a banana republic, where these kind of activities are routine. This is not routine for the United States. President Trump, as I said a moment ago, knows he's right and has no fear. This is a very dangerous man when it comes to the illegal activities by criminals. And he will do whatever he needs to turn a republic around. I believe President Trump, his heart is in the right place. He learned the mistakes he made in 2016, and he said this publicly, listening to the advice of lobbyists when it came to high-level appointments. He knows the mistake he made in 2016. He will not repeat that mistake. And what I've seen so far in his appointments tells me he learned his mistake, and he's going to move forward without the mistakes he made in 2016, Doug. And I say, God bless President Trump.
Amen to that. And that's why John Moore contributes so much to this program. He's really on point, and actually he's done his research. And I believe that John, I think pretty much you're accurate in all of these things that you were saying. Now, I know that we're changing topics quite a bit. But I just want to cover so much with you. We know the people in North Carolina are still suffering. I think that jail time for people in North Carolina is absolutely, or for the people supposedly helping from the government, the people in North Carolina, East Tennessee. I think jail time is in order. Marjorie Taylor Greene appeared today and said the very same thing. This is cut four. And John, your reaction to this, go okay. Ahead. Cut four, Eric the Tech. All right. We're going to hang on just 1 second here. He's working his tail off. I'll tell you that.
I want to follow up on something that we talked about last time you're in studio with us, the FEMA response, especially in North Carolina. Walk us through what you know about this and what you hope President Trump does with FEMA once he gets into office.
Wow. I was so happy to see our upcoming Vice President J.D. Vance there just last week. I thought, gosh, you know, America did the right thing by supporting him to be vice president with President Trump. And I'm so glad President Trump picked him. The poor people in Western North Carolina are still homeless. They're sleeping in tents. They're not receiving their big $750 checks. A lot of them are being denied. And it's truly, I think it's the ultimate failure of our government. We're watching $1 billion being handed over to Ukraine. We're watching, hundreds of millions of dollars being given to Africa. We found out today that the Biden administration unfroze $10 billion in assets to Iran 3 days after the election. But the people in Western North Carolina, American citizens, taxpayers, have been treated like scum of the earth.
My God, that's unbelievable.
I think people should go to prison over it.
And there Marjorie, it is. John, I mean, you've got to agree to that, right? I mean, people need to go.
Words of surprise. You know, during Hurricane Katrina, FEMA could not find a Superdome, which can be seen from space, by the way, with the naked eye, could not find a Superdome for a week.
Oh, jeez.
Well, they couldn't. I mean, that's the record. So are we surprised at FEMA screwing up? They've been screwing up for decades. There's nothing new about that. Now, the government of North Carolina, of course, has its own resources. All 50 states, I believe, have what's called SEMA. That's S-E-M-A. State Emergency Management Agency, and let's not leave the state government of North Carolina out of this, or leave the state government of Tennessee out of this. They have resources with men and trucks and equipment and money, so let's not lay leave FEMA alone in this blame. Let's not leave out the state governments who have resources that could have been used also. And as best I can tell, weren't used very much, if at all.
Mm. There's the courtrooms should be filled. The investigative bodies should be busy. And the proper judges should be busy as well, doling out the sentences once convicted for some of these people. Because where in the hell, obviously the money is not going. You're talking about the assistance, obviously, number one. Number two, the money that should be allocated to the victims. And then the land grab that's going on. I mean, it's undeniable. Right from the beginning, we said that there was going to be a land grab taking place, and that's what's happening. By corporations like BlackRock and others, the lithium mines. How much more do people need to see? You know, John. I mean, it's sad when I look. When you take, and I'm going to shut up after this, but when you take the loss of life in Ukraine and now Syria, and then of course at the hands of the Mossad and the IDF and in Israel and Syria, of course, and the loss of life that's taking place in the U.S. I mean, it's just hard to fathom that so much chaos can be wrought by this regime, this illegitimate regime. It really is, John. I don't know what to say.
Well, there's no end to the corruption. There's no end to what needs to be done. Your contacts at Mar-a-Lago are certainly coming through with some information that's going to help us here. And I'm really looking forward to President Trump taking office and the biggest cleanup since, well, I don't know if it's ever happened, really. Maybe since Andy Jackson, one of my favorite presidents, by the way. There really is no precedent for what President Trump has done and will do. He never held any office, elected office, before he ran for president at all. I don't know if that's happened in the last 100 plus years, and it needed to happen. He's a unique individual in many ways. And I've worked with men like him. It's hard for a man like President Trump to admit that he's made a mistake, but he's done that on several occasions, which is difficult for a man like him. We got 5 weeks before the rubber meets the road. The left, the deep state, what I call our opposition, socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims, they're shaking in their boots. The senior executive service is shaking in their boots. I think many of them are going to lose. They're hard to fire, but if they lose their security clearance, they basically can't function anymore, can they, Doug?
No, that's true. And I really haven't given it a thought from that perspective. Some of the permanent bureaucracy employees take away their security clearance or make them reapply. That would be a good way of that'd be kind of like an end around to trim the fat. Right now, what, only 6% of federal employees have returned back to their offices? I mean, some insanely small number. I think that's pretty accurate. Those people who have not shown back up to their office, get rid of them. I mean, as one example. So there's a lot going on here. This is a John question, okay, a John Moore question. Knowing you were coming on tonight, I pulled this video clip because this caught my attention in a big way. Obviously, John, you're a military guy. You're former military. You're in touch with a lot of people within the military. I'm going to play this clip for you. It's a short clip, but it speaks to what is happening with our military assets, specifically our armaments, our missiles. And just, I'm not even going to say a word after this clip is done. This is cut 7, Eric the Tech. The question is, are we running out of arms? Are we running out of missiles? That's the question. And the answer and the visual in this just really made me stand up and pay attention. Okay, there's a visual that this lawmaker is going to show. And I think, when I saw it, I was blown away by it. So this is a John Moore question, folks. This is cut 7. And Eric the Tech, fire when ready.
Meanwhile, Congressman, there's a startling headline from the Washington Free Beacon. It says this. It says, in a war against China, the U.S. runs out of missiles in a matter of weeks, according to a House committee. So we're talking about the House Select Committee on China. I want to get your reaction to this. I mean, you've been very vocal about China and specifically in your own backyard as it relates to manufacturing companies owned by the Chinese to say, "Gay, get out of Dodge, not here."
Yeah, listen, David, this is scary stuff because I'm on the Armed Services Committee. I'm in these SCIFs, and even unclassified information shows just how far we are behind the Chinese when it comes to armaments. Pretty much everything but sea power when you're talking about under the sea. I want to show you a chart. I'm going to hold this up really quickly. I have this hanging in my office because it's so important. This is the pacing threat, a modernization for this year. On your right in red is the Chinese armaments that they have built, or we think they've built, and on the left is blue. If you look at the very bottom, you will see the missiles that Communist China has right now compared to the missiles that we have on the left. Now, if this is not enough to scare you into some action, it is for us on the National Defense Authorization Act. We will be voting on this week. It is imperative that we rebuild our military in armaments and in personnel. And that's what Pete Hegseth, the nominee for SecDef, has in mind as well. We have got to strengthen our military so we can be ready just in case we have to go to war, or even more so to act as a deterrent to Communist China. Peace through strength.
Meanwhile,
John, your thoughts, and are you a supporter of Pete Hegseth?
It just so happens that my hometown,
sorry about that.
My hometown, St. Louis, is where Boeing manufactures Tomahawk missiles. That's in St. Charles. I personally know people that are involved in manufacturing these missiles. They don't manufacture that many that quickly. It's a very labor intensive thing to manufacture Tomahawk missiles, which are critical in national defense. That's just one example. We can go into other areas, such as the F-35, which was originally meant to be an inexpensive replacement for the F-16. Well, it didn't quite work out that way. Two recent defects have come to light publicly about the F-35, the most expensive jet fighter ever manufactured by any country. The avionics require so much cooling capacity, that, in fact, more than the F-35 apparently can ever generate. So they can't use the latest and greatest avionics in the F-35, which is a degradation of their capabilities. And within the last week, we found that the 25-millimeter Gatling gun is so powerful that it's cracking the airframe and has issues with being fired accurately, along with the fact that when it fires for 3 seconds, it depletes all the ammunition. 3 seconds, the Gatling gun as part of the F-35.
Wow.
And of course, as I've been making fun of for more than 2 years, as opposed to every jet fighter ever manufactured, including all the World War II propeller-driven fighters, you can't fly the F-35 in a thunderstorm. That's the most expensive jet fighter ever manufactured. You can't fly it in a thunderstorm. It doesn't have the cooling capacity for the avionics it needs. And the Gatling gun can be fired for 3 seconds while being inaccurate and possibly cracking the frame of the jet fighter. That's one weapon system, just one. And of course, we have
who do we blame for that? I mean, who designed that?
Designed by a committee. And it gets even better. The Air Force generals would not allow the U.S. Air Force to get the most recent upgrades to the F-15, also manufactured in my hometown by men and women that I personally know. And I've had blood relatives work at Boeing, which used to be McDonnell Douglas. Now the South Koreans and the Israelis get the latest upgrades to the F-15, which the F-15 with the latest upgrades, you can barely tell the difference in performance between the F-15 with the latest upgrades and the F-35. That's why the Air Force General did not want our Air Force to get the latest upgrades, because it would be to become too apparent to too many people that why bother with the most expensive jet fighter ever manufactured when the F-15 with the latest upgrades in avionics and weapons can barely tell the difference. Now, just before President Trump left office, about 6 months before he left, the first new order for F-15s was placed with the Department of Defense, with Boeing, in about 20-something years.
Really?
Somebody briefed President Trump on the real deal. And quite frankly, in my opinion, the F-35 needs to be written off as an incredibly expensive mistake. Give the Air Force what it needs, the F-15s with the latest upgrades, and get back to doing what's real and what's practical when it comes to defending the country. And another bonus, many of our Air Force aircraft have software provided by the Communist Chinese.
Marvelous.
In case you didn't know that, there's certainly the possibility that the Chinese built themselves back doors into the software that goes into our military aircraft. It's completely crazy and upside down to have our most likely foe be building the software, the electronics that go into our military aircraft. Completely unacceptable. But that's what's been going on for many years, Doug.
Man, that's how old is the F-15 roughly?
25, 30 years, something like that. Okay. I could do a quick search.
That's fine. So it's been around. It's a proven military vehicle.
Well, the thing with the F-15 is it's everything in there is modular. So the F-15 with the most recent upgrades is a platform that keeps getting modernized. And let's see, it went into it went into production. I just about had it here, and then went bonkers crazy. Wikipedia.
1985.
So that's 40 years ago.
40 years. All right. So there's enough. Obviously, we can tell versus the F-35, which is newer. So, okay. But that video clip about the superiority of armaments by China and we're not making missiles as quickly as we need to. And correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't we give some arms away to Ukraine, equipment as well as,
we have it. I don't know. It's been all that much compared to what we left behind in Afghanistan. But Russia and China have missiles that can go 5 or 6 times the speed of sound, which we don't have any defense against them that I'm aware of. If there is a defense, it would be a satellite base, and we're not aware of it. But there's no defense that we're aware of to defend against missiles going 5 or 6 times the speed of sound. That simply doesn't exist. And we're upside down when it comes to defending against the latest and greatest. They have torpedoes and go faster than the speed of sound. There's no defense against them. These super cavitating torpedoes, which makes aircraft carriers obsolete against anything except third world countries.
Yeah, but don't worry. Our military is 100% woke. You know, the DEI, as well as the wokeism within their military, you got to thank Lloyd Austin. You know, the face shield, the mask, the rainbow lanyard. What an embarrassment. What an embarrassment. So hopefully Pete Hegseth is going to get in there and change things immediately.
Well, once Pete's in there, we no longer will have women put in harm's way intentionally. General Wainwright surrendered Corregidor because he was fearful that the 400 nurses would be put in harm's way. Otherwise, he would have held out. But that's why he surrendered in Corregidor in World War II. We now have women in MOSs, military occupational specialties, that put them in harm's way intentionally. The Russians don't do that. The Chinese don't do that. Only we do it. We intentionally put women in harm's way, which degrades the lethality of any unit that they're in. Women simply can't do what men do. They can't, and they never will. The average American civilian believes that women have to pass the same test as men to be in these occupations. They don't. The tests have all been either reduced for the women or done away with. Any test right. That involves upper body strength has just been done away with. And that puts everybody in jeopardy.
Wow. Yeah. So I do see a lot of things changing here in the near term, which does make me happy. But again, I think we have 42 days to really make sure President Trump is kept safe, J.D. Vance, everyone around him, and then the inauguration, which I'm going to be watching that real close. Do you have any concerns about the inauguration, John?
Well, I'm not sure. I hope that President Trump will be safe, that the inauguration will go through without a hitch, that President Trump will be able to go through that ceremony and travel to the Oval Office and kick butt, quite frankly.
Amen.
The Secret Service has egg on their face for what took place in the last few months, as well they need to. I'm a big fan of Dan Bongino. Dan Bongino, of course, is the veteran Secret Service. It's been rumored that he may be offered the position of being head of the Secret Service, which he's publicly denied that he wants.
I've heard those denials as well. But then, I don't know.
But then he hasn't been face-to-face with President Trump and had the offer made.
Right.
That's a pretty heavy thing to have in your lap. The President of the United States is saying, Mr. Bongino, would you consider taking over Secret Service? And having turned down the president under those circumstances, that would be a tough place to be. And I know if I was in those circumstances, I'd find it tough to turn down the president of the United States, wouldn't you, Doug?
Oh, man. I mean, if he asked me to sweep the floor, I would feel compelled because of my respect to the office to do just that, whatever's asked of me. And then I'd be very concerned about sweeping the floor properly. You know what I mean? So
absolutely.
But that's not there with this. Well, it hasn't really been there as far as I could tell since Reagan. You know, to me, that's when our downfall really began in modern times, I guess. Absolutely. So John, tell me what's on your mind. We've gone through a lot of content, but nothing you really.
Well, something we never talked about is what's happening right now on the 10th day of December, 2024. The worst crime in human history taking place right now. The consequences of the COVID-19 vaccination and clot shot, which will ultimately result in millions of innocent men, women, children either being sterilized or dead because of the consequences of the COVID-19 vaccination clot shot, which is still being given, by the way, to children, to men, to women who are ignorant. It's not a matter of education or achievement. We've had J.D. Vance took the clot shot. He got sicker than he'd ever been in his life as a consequence. And we still have doctors and nurses administering these alleged vaccinations. I believe that after President Trump is back in the Oval Office, that the clot shot will be made illegal, I hope, and that the records of the Department of Defense who manufactured them, Pfizer and Moderna, did not manufacture the vaccines. The Department of Defense did. What's wrong with this picture?
Man, a lot of people don't know that. And thanks for bringing that up, because people need to understand who's behind this. Continue, please.
The Department of Defense has a mission statement. The Department of Defense is two things: to kill people and blow things up. That's what they do, ultimately. And what they're doing, manufacturing these vaccines secretly, is barbaric and illegal and criminal, and needs to be looked into by Pete Hegseth and everybody else who would be in a position of authority to do this, with the new head of the FBI, the new head of the Department of Defense, the new head of the Department of Justice, to reveal the criminal activity that's resulted in millions, literally millions of men, women, and children being dead and disabled. Doug, I've interviewed two funeral home employees and two coroners. They agree that there's been a 100% increase in funeral home activity since the vaccines were introduced. And it's like it's never happened. We're doubling the number of people dying. We have a 20% increase in all-cause morbidity since the vaccines were introduced. And it's just business as usual, Doug. This is not acceptable. Not acceptable at all. We've personally had men in my neighborhood die from the vaccines, be disabled by the vaccines. My neighborhood is mostly forest and hills, and not many people in Davisville, Missouri. And I interview people all the time that have firsthand experience with the death and disablement of people all over the country, that will continue for decades into the future. I came real close to getting a swine flu vaccine back in the 70s. My wife at the time was a registered nurse. She said, "Johnny, don't need that." I still know people disabled from the swine flu vaccine 40 years, almost 50 years later.
And at least back then, there was some level of accountability.
Six people died, and they shut down the whole thing nationwide.
Exactly.
Six people died. And now we've got people dying literally by the hundreds of thousands, and it continues. This is completely unacceptable. We need to have Nuremberg-style trials as to what really took place. I warn people that spring of 2020, two things, and it's at my website, 8-minute clip. First of all, there's never been a safe and effective vaccine fabricated and released to the public in 9 months or less. That's still true now, as it was then. The second thing, my belief, now proven, that the vaccines were already in refrigerators waiting to be distributed in the spring of 2020, only 9 months after the alleged pandemic was announced. The whole thing was a fraud. It was a massive criminal activity, criminal conspiracy to depopulate the West. And that's what it has been doing. That's what we'll continue to do, Doug.
Do you see the same thing happening now with the bird flu? Because we're hearing rumblings, obviously. Hey, the bird flu, you know, it's going to be a big thing. And even Hotez, I want to thank somebody.
Hotez says that the day after the President Trump takes office,
right,
there'll be several new pandemics released. Well, he's part of the criminal conspiracy, as far as I'm concerned, Doug.
I mean, just for saying that guy should be investigated, locked up, and
absolutely,
you know, I cannot.
He's part of a criminal conspiracy, obviously. A criminal conspiracy is two or more people agreeing to commit a crime. That's what a criminal conspiracy is, and he's obviously part of it.
Do you, okay? So with Bhattacharya now heading the NIH, that's huge to me, because he was a signatory to the Great Barrington Declaration.
Absolutely.
Okay, so he is the antithesis of everything that's been in NIH over the last decades, really, along with NIAID.
Well, here's my recommendation to the men and women at the NIH, the CDC, and so forth. Get your passport current. Get a visa to a country that does not have extradition to the United States, and get the hell out of Dodge, because you're going to be investigated and go to jail.
Yeah, I'd like to see that happen. I really would. I think the proper people in America would be ready for that and be accepting of that. But there's still this swath of people who are just absolutely under the spell that, hey, you know, we've got to get the clot shots. We've got to get these shots. I mean,
I was on a college debate team. The first thing we learned is you can't use a logical argument against an emotional one. And
yeah,
these people,
that's true.
They're working from emotion. And the only way to deal with that is an emotional argument on your side. Unfortunately, these people are stuck in this mindset that vaccines are good. One of the things that Bobby Kennedy Jr. has said a number of times publicly, he believes in safe and effective vaccines. But listen carefully to what the man says. He never once talks about what he considers to be a safe and effective vaccine. The last one that I would have accepted would have been tetanus, and I won't accept a tetanus a shot anymore. I will not accept any vaccine for any reason ever again, Doug. How about you?
No, 100% no. And my grandchildren have been properly schooled, I guess, or their parents, and I'm proud to say that they're very judicious about their children's health, including and especially not getting what 70 what is it, like 75, 76?
It was 72, but I know it's increased. And there's been another study done of 100,000 Americans who never got any vaccine for any reason. They turn out to have virtually no chronic diseases.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And it's hard for me to believe. Oh, by the way, I just want to welcome the people from the listeners and viewers from Common Censored, the rated our chat. God bless you. Thanks for being here. Look, I mean, all of this, we've got to really set the record straight publicly. The trials have to be transparent and open. I really think that, what is happening right now, I think there's a great awakening.
We have hundreds of men and women complicit in murder. There's no way to describe it. They are complicit in murder of thousands, tens of thousands of Americans, innocent men, women, and children who trusted these individuals, trusted their expertise, trusted the false science that was put forth. I like to make reference to the Nuremberg trials and what took place there. And the trials of war criminals continued as recently as 2 years ago. Doug, we had an elderly woman. She was a teenage secretary at a concentration camp. She made the coffee, answered the phones, took dictation, typed the letters, opened the mail. She was charged with war crimes.
Yeah.
Which tells me that the janitor at Pfizer should be charged with a war crime also. The janitor at Pfizer is no more complicit than that teenage girl who made the coffee in the Nazi concentration camp.
If there is a level of awareness as to what is taking place, I do believe that there's some liability there. Are we going to see any civil cases coming? Now, I'm hearing that there
are... I hope by the thousands.
Class action suits, perhaps.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
But I'll tell you something. I don't think, and this is just me, I don't think that, regardless of what Hotez says, that they can actually create the same conditions that brought us
people
into...
People aren't going to buy it. There'll be resistance to it. And there needs to be resistance. Resistance needs to be immediate. It needs to be vocal. It needs to be strong against the false narratives that were put forth. Seeing people stand 6 feet apart to get into a grocery store, people wearing masks that caused harm and did no good, harm to children that can't be recovered, and the schools being shut down. A child had a more chance of being struck by lightning than being harmed by the COVID-19, and that's reality.
Exactly. Yeah. And even at the level of PCPs, your own doctor, if it can be proved proved that they had taken money or given bonuses or whatever for pushing that shot. Look, they need to be dealt with as well as the pharmacies and pharmacists. And the other thing, too, about hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, some of the frontline drugs that could have been used that were prohibited by these pharmacies, CVS and Walgreens. I mean, there's got to be some accountability here. And I think...
Or that, needs to be.
Yeah. And I think that the exposure is getting greater, I think. And I think people are waking up.
Well, Doug, we went through the Spanish flu in 1918, yep. World War One, World War Two, the Civil War. We never, ever had the morbidity from any of those events that we're experiencing right now on the 10th day of December, 2024, ever. A 20% increase in all-cause morbidity. Yep. This has never happened in the history of our republic. It needs to be dealt with. It needs to be dealt with severely. And the people responsible for this need to pay the price, which would be life in prison.
And Bill Gates, you know, admitting that India is a testing ground for diseases and vaccines, his word, not mine. It's just, I mean, crimes against humanity from Bill Gates to other billionaires who think they run the world. What the hell? That guy's got no business going anywhere near anything.
Well, there's arrest warrants out for him in several countries where his vaccines have killed thousands of people.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we need to bring that home and to really seek justice and obtain justice here in the U.S. We only have about 4 minutes left. I can't believe how quickly time flies with you. I'm going to turn the last 4 minutes over to you. And whatever message you have to
well, ultimately, we're dealing with a spiritual battle, and we need to keep that in mind. I have my pastor on with me every other Friday who gives his analysis from a Christian perspective. I'm looking to get another guest that will be giving a different perspective from the Holy Bible. I won't go into any detail on that until I get the guest. But ultimately, we need to keep our head on a swivel. Keep in mind that ultimately we're dealing with is a spiritual battle. I'm a born again Bible believing Christian myself, and people need to get their spiritual house in order. Attend a local Bible believing church, whether it's a home based church or a brick and mortar church. I think that's essential to have your spiritual life in order, because what we're going through right now. It's only going to get worse. President Trump will do what he can, but we need to have everybody on board to get Bible-believing conservative Christian patriots elected at every level of government, from the local city council and school board on up to the president, obviously. And the battle is not over. It's just begun. Just because President Trump was elected does not mean it's over. It means we're beginning to take back our republic from these evil people, men and women, who have decided to destroy our republic, and hopefully we can recover our republic and get it back to where it needs to be, and moving forward to give prosperity and health to everybody in our country, Doug. That's my belief. That's my advice.
Wow. And you know, no matter what station in life you find yourself at the moment, I believe every one of us can make a difference. And John, you pointed the bottom line. You pointed to the bottom line that we are engaged in a spiritual battle. And I think if the more people know and understand that, the better off we'll be, the better chances we'll have to survive over the next decade. You know, I mean, we have to know that we're fighting evil. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Visit his website. Go there, bookmark his website, listen to his shows weekdays. John, tell the audience again what time your show starts.
Well, the live show is 7 to 10 Central Time. It would be 8 to 11 Eastern. The archives, I'm on about 10 different platforms, Rumble and Brighteon and so forth, can be listened to anytime you like. And my once-a-week video podcast is released to the public on Rumble Saturday morning at the latest.
I love that, too. How is that going for you?
Well, it's been a 12-month adventure to learn how to do it, get the equipment, get the expertise, make mistakes, do rehearsals. And we're doing a live show, a live podcast beginning soon. We're shooting for the first week of January to be doing a live one-hour podcast a week.
You just keep your hands off Eric the Tech. I need him. I need him here. And well, folks,
if I can offer more money than you, Mike, maybe I can get him.
You know what? He's married to my daughter. I could make it painful.
But, okay. Okay. You know, well, I got a good tech. We're okay there, Doug.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I need him. As you could see from the onset, I couldn't get things to work, and that's because he's not here.